to talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock.
I just love that intro that Jeremy made for you.
It is.
It's funny.
It is. It's a great intro, and it's kind of true in every sense of the word.
You got it.
Because Honoriness is my middle name, and so it's the way it is. This is the car show. So for the next 2 hours, we're going to talk about cars. I've been a master technician for 25 to 30 years. I lose count. We own a repair shop, and that's not what about this show is all about. It's about you. It's about you, your cars, your motorhomes, your hot rods, vehicle emissions. They told me my tires had timed out. They told me I had 6/32 or 5 millimeters on my brake pads. What does that mean? I have a fluid that's pink leaking. All those kinds of questions. Mm-hmm. How much is this? And I can just do brackets. That's all I can do. I can just do brackets. Mm-hmm. So 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood, you folks, I have a list of the best car repair shops at marksalem.com, the best car repair shops in Phoenix and the surrounding communities. This is one of them. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. They're up on I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. They've been around a long time. Nate is a great guy and a great diesel. They work on light, foreign and domestic light diesels. They don't work on the big trucks. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about 1 ton and under. And anything with a diesel, both in the foreign and the domestic. They are die-hard service, repair, and parts place. So they understand the importance of proper diagnosis and then the repair. And one equals two. So that means the symptom and the problem is gone. Proper diagnosis, the repair, and then we got no more problems. So if you live in the North Phoenix area, or really anywhere, because there's so few diesel places out there that really do a good job, then may I suggest Strictly Diesel. You can also go on their website, 24 hours a day, and they have all kinds of nifty information about diesels and the parts that you can buy to enhance your diesel. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a key word there, enhance your diesel.
And people like to do that, that's for sure.
You got that right, baby. Yeah. Okay, so last week we were talking about rodents.
Yep.
Rodents. And those are something we have at the ranch, rodents.
Yeah.
So I made a mistake.
Okay.
I was wrong.
Well, rodents that cause problems in your car's wiring and stuff,
yeah.
Not just rodents.
Right, yeah. Right. Okay, fine. Clarify it as much as you want. I don't care. So what I said is that your insurance company covers rodent damage. Mm-hmm. But I was wrong. Can you hear that? I was wrong. Mark Salem was wrong. You
write
say
it
I never
down, folks, because he doesn't admit that very often.
But I was wrong.
Yeah.
So good morning, Mark. And this is from a young man named Tim Sheehan, and okay. He's in the insurance business. Good morning. Just wanted to offer a little more information on a call you took earlier. And he was nice to me because mm-hmm. he didn't say you were full of BS.
Right.
Okay. Rodent damage on any vehicle is only covered if it's a quick and sudden event. Then he goes on to describe it. If there's evidence of long-term infestation, such as nesting, heavy droppings throughout the vehicle compartments, and consistent points of in and out paths, that's not a covered loss. So if there's 3 generations of rodents in your car, you're out of luck. However, and there's the mounds
How
of
do you
poop,
tell that?
The mounds of poop are as big as a coffee cup. You're out of luck. Okay. If the damage is a result of a quick hit, such as rodents get into your garage one cold winter night and dine out on a wiring or wiring harness or a single component, then they leave, that is a covered loss because it's a sudden event. Mm-hmm. What they're saying is you can't find some wiring problem or can't find a problem and then a month or 6 months later go into the garage and say, hey, what's the matter? And he goes, well, somebody ate up all your wiring. Well, we don't know when it was.
Right.
And, of course, there's entirely possible that the mound of poop is quite large. Mm-hmm. So you have to pay attention to this. And so thank you, Tim, for clearing that up. And just as he gave us another analogy,
okay,
like a roof leak, if you let it leak for years, they're not paying for it. They're not going to pay for it or the damage. But if the rainstorm was on Sunday night and you call your agent on Monday morning and say, I got a roof leak, that's covered. So you just have to figure that out.
Right.
Rodents dominated my life last week.
They John did. Is your yep. first caller, John.
Well, and we've got some rodent tape that we've been using at the shop because we have people bring their cars in sometimes. Their wires have been eaten up. And so we started putting this blue tape on, and it seems to work.
rodent tape. It's literally called rodent tape.
You can get it on Amazon, yeah.
Rodent tape is a deterrent for critters that like chewing on the vehicle wiring. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why they like it, but they don't like the wires inside, but they like the plastic crap on the outside.
Okay.
So wrap any trouble spots to prevent any further wiring harness eating. The tape is treated with capsaicin, whatever the heck that is, the active component in chili peppers.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. So you don't want to lick this, lick your fingers after you put this on. It has 65 feet of tape. It's $33.39 on Amazon. And so it's called rodent tape. Mm-hmm. So if you have rodents. Now, husbands and, well, wives. I should talk to the wives. This is not going to work on your husband. You're not going to be able to wrap his face in this tape and shut his mouth because Renee's tried and it didn't work. So the bottom line is you're not allowed to do that. Mm-hmm. Then, at last, we got another rodent thing. Listen to your show. Heard the call about the rodents. I had a problem back. Also got into my car. Total damage was $4,000.
That's a lot.
So more than likely, if he knows that, then his insurance probably paid for it. So it was a sudden event. Asked several people how to do it. My insurance agent told me about a client who had the problem and started to put Irish Spring deodorant soap cut into pieces in Ziploc bags with holes, I guess, in the Ziploc bag, and put them inside the engine compartment, and the problem went away. They also said that the dryer fragrance softener sheets sprinkled around your car drives the critters away.
Mm-hmm.
So dryer sheets, peppermint oil, obviously chili powder to some extent.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell them about your chili powder thing?
My chili powder thing?
Yeah.
With my flowers or the front yard? Or
Yeah, the flowers
well,
and the
Well, we
rabbits.
Have those darn gophers or whatever they are, and mm-hmm. so we started burying stuff and, you know, putting chili pepper in there. We did mothballs. We did all kinds of stuff, and I don't know if it really worked.
Well, what about your new flowers and the rabbits?
Yeah, I planted a whole wheelbarrow full of flowers and went out there the next day, and there's, you know, eaten up, and there's little pods of dirt and stuff are all over the place. So I sprinkled them with chili powder, and they didn't come back
the next day. You sprinkle. That's animal abuse, I'm telling you right
now.
But you sprinkled them. And Larry, the neighbor a mile away, called up and said, my eyes are burning. What's
no,
Renee
he
doing?
Didn't.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. All righty. Who's on the phone?
John.
John, good morning. How can I help you this morning?
Hi, Mark. I got two 06 Chevy Colorados, 2.8 5-speed. One's got 600,000 miles. The other's got 300,000.
Wow.
The one with 300,000, the last 6 months, I've been getting where I haven't been able to start the truck because of what they call a pass lock,
okay,
which cuts the fuel to the injectors, and you have to wait like 10 to 11 minutes before you can start your vehicle.
Okay.
Have you had anybody contact you with that problem at your shop?
Yeah. What's going on is it's got a theft deterrent system, and it doesn't like what it's seeing. And so it thinks someone's trying to steal your car, so it's going to put the car in timeout for some period of time. How many keys do you have for that?
Two.
And I bet one is used. Did you switch them?
I switched them and still does.
Okay. So what we have to do is we have to go in and talk to the computer and say, what's the matter with you? And we might go through a process where we plug in, and it's not a code reader. This is a very expensive piece of equipment called a scanner. And the scanner actually communicates with the PCM, the computer, and says, do you see the key? No, I don't. But you can get it to crank, so the mechanisms, the mechanical, the teeth and valleys and stuff of the key are working, and it'll get it to crank over. But the chip, it doesn't see the chip, and it doesn't know that it's Mark Salem's key or Renee Salem's key. So this typically could involve $150 to $300, depending on the cost of the key, and you're going to have to do, I'm guessing now, but I'm thinking I'm going to be pretty doggone close. You're going to probably have to buy two new keys. They're going to have to be chipped.
Okay. It's just a regular key. It doesn't have... I've gotten down and bought them at dealers, and it's like $7 and some odd cents to have them cut a key. So it's just a regular key.
Okay.
Now, I was going to ask, do you think it might have anything to do with the MP3 player? Because I have an MP3 player and the one where it does it all the time.
That's not a correlation or anything I've ever seen before.
Because I know if I were to buy that same radio like a new one, I have to go to the dealer and get the radio programmed so it'll work in my vehicle.
I've never heard of that either. So I mean, I don't know where you're getting your information, but I could be wrong, because I was wrong last year one time. So
you were wrong too. That'd be twice.
Yeah,
that's right.
No,
there
I was counting that time.
That's
I was counting
time
that time. Yeah, yeah. I'm the one that keeps track of how wrong I am. But if it was a radio issue, why don't you disable the radio? Why don't you pull the fuse on the radio or pull the power lead on the radio? And if that was the case, then that would take the radio out of the equation. I think these are too old to have any kind of entertainment interface to the cloud. So I don't think we're talking to the cloud. I don't think it has the ability. It doesn't have OnStar. It doesn't have all this. This is a car that predates all that data. So I don't know the answer to your question. Does this passcode, does it have a dash light on it that's yellow or red or anything?
No, it's red. It's basically, it kind of looks like a battery with a lock. And when you first cycle on the key, you know, it'll come on. And then I read online that when it's not going to work, it flashes. And the last time it happened to me yesterday, I happened to look at it, and that battery with a lock on it was flashing.
Okay. Yeah, I'm unclear. Do you have an owner's manual for it?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I know this seems to be, I know two other people.
1 minute.
In Tucson that have, like, 07 Colorados and that. They have the same problem.
Okay.
Two different people.
All right. And you haven't had anybody from a professional nature look at it yet, right?
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. I think, you know, that's going to be your likely next step. I think that's the appropriate step. I'm thinking to myself, this car is 12 years old. And so it might have well has been driven by Fred Flintstone and Barney Fife in my world. And so fixing cars that are 12 years old on a 1 to 10 scale typically don't exceed the number 4 or 5. So I'm unclear. It's not something that's been on my radar screen. I'm not quite sure. But I'll tell you what. There's going to be somebody out there that's going to call in 602-508-0960 and help me help you. Mm-hmm.
I have one other question.
Go ahead.
Isn't the only way you're going to be able to diagnose this is if it does it at the time when it's not working?
Well, it depends. It depends how much data's back there for us to do. It may very well be something that we're allowed to go into that module and say, why are you shutting me off? And it says, I don't like this. And so then we look at that and we disable that system, and it goes, I don't like that even worse. And so then we figure out how the system works, and if we jump pin 17 and 21, that gives a fake signal, boom, it starts right up. Or if it's not happening to us, do we still pin those two and we give it back to John and say, go drive it? And you say, nope, that didn't fix it. Or we go drive it, or we use it for our parts car for a day or whatever. So the answer, we're not going to be able to really answer that until we have the initial look-see. What part of town are you in?
I'm all over the place. So does the check engine light have to be on for you to do this diagnostic stuff?
No. And it's entire. Okay. And we have software that's you're not going to find on the internet. So I mean, he's going to go into the Colorado section, and he's not even going to care that it's a 707, and he's going to use the word passcode as a search word, and we're going to move on from there. Plus, we also have access, which costs me thousands of dollars, to go into a big umbrella where we've got technicians all over the world talking to one another, and we can put in Colorado passcode 07, no start, delay. We can use search words like that. Boom, it pops up, and then we talk to people. But ironically enough, and you won't believe this, you might talk to 20 guys that have fixed it, and every one of them has a different fix. And that's going to create a problem. We're looking for continuity here. But then you also don't know if they fixed it on Monday and they claim success, but in reality on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday it happened again, the customer was mad at him and went some other shop. That happens. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you can understand the dilemma of trying to fix it based on YouTube and internet information is because you know that hairy-chested guys thump their chest and say, I fixed it. But in reality, that was an hour ago, and in 2 days the problem comes back, and they're not going to get on the internet and tell everybody they screwed up like I do. Mm-hmm. So anyway, thank you very much. 602-508-0960. If you have a comment, you question, or if you have a car problem, I think I can do better than I did for John. Okay. 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour. Oh, boy, I'm really hot coming in there. 21 minutes after the hour, and my name is Mark Salem, and the name of the show is Under the Hood, and we're here at your service to help you out with your car-related problems. And I'm going to go to Sarah first, but hang on, Sarah, for just about 20 seconds. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Larry Harker's Auto Repair at 38th Avenue and Indian School. They've been around since 1967. Bob and Ellen are two people that know car repair. Ellen handles the front counter, and Bob handles the shop. When I have a car in that geographic area and that story starts out with, I've had it to every shop in the world and nobody can fix this, I can say with 100% certainty, if you take it to Bob at Larry Harker's Auto, he can fix it. So there's going to be a diagnostic fee, then there's going to be an estimate, then there's going to be a repair if you okay the estimate, and then he's going to go drive it and make sure it's gone, and then he's going to give it back to you. So he does all the other stuff too, electrical work, brake systems, emissions, oil changes, vehicle maintenance, cooling system, he does all that. But more than anything else, he's one of the world-class diagnosticians. That's Bob at Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Sarah, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I have a question. I just got a brand-new F-250 diesel, and it came equipped with the exhaust brake. And we're here visiting and dealing with all your sales. My husband was concerned that if I used that option, that it would be kind of hard on the exhaust system. Can you answer that question?
You know, Sarah, it's one of those God days for me. There's a guy next to me right here, and I don't really like him, but he came to visit me from Texas. I don't really like Fords, and I think that people that own Fords are typically deficient between the ears. But he pulls into my our horse place, and he drives this brand new Ford F-250 with a diesel, and him and his wife are arguing about the brake.
Use of the exhaust brake.
The use, get a little closer to you.
Okay.
All right. The use of the exhaust brake. So let me just ask Bob Key from Kerrville, Texas. At the end of the discussion, who won and who didn't?
So
it's a yes or no, and my wife or me. Answer, buddy.
The bigger irony here, Sarah, is that my wife is named Sarah.
It is.
And so this is one of those serendipitous questions.
On this show,
I'm sorry.
Don't use words you can't spell. Okay.
I can spell it.
Okay,
time. Keep it to two syllables max.
Okay. Yeah,
okay.
That's fine.
So we just took delivery less than a week ago on a 2018, and I had asked Sarah about the button because she had gotten the pre-delivery with the salesperson, and he had told her it was safe to use. And I had the exact same concerns as your husband because I was used to older technology that would actually block the exhaust system and create the back pressure. And, you know, we had seen trucks over the years that had blown out exhaust manifold gaskets and stuff as a result. Well, Mark explained to me that this is a higher technology piece, and we have a variable vane turbocharger. So the vanes inside the turbo, when you activate that brake, flatten out, sort of like the propeller on an airplane when you feather the prop. And so it can create the needed back pressure without causing any harm to the exhaust system.
It's actually plugging the exhaust. It's very constipated. The car is very constipated at this point. And there's not a lot of poop coming out of the tailpipe.
Right.
But we're using the compression of the engine to go brrrr. So the answer to your question in a flat way is use it for a couple of reasons. Number one, you'll save brakes. Number two, you'll like it. Number three, you won't be pumping your brakes, whether you're hauling something or not, when you get onto a downgrade. And when you start coming down, you pull it out of sixth gear or pull it out of overdrive, push the button on overdrive. You apply your Jake brake or your exhaust brake. And when you go down at a certain speed or in a certain RPM, you're going to be going down the hill, and you're not going to want to ride your brakes for 2 miles. And it'll go, and then it'll go, and then it slows you down to 48. And I'm using stupid numbers here. It slows you down to 48, and then it kicks off. And then when you get past 53, brings you down. So the answer is use the heck out of it. Here's the better answer. If you don't use it, you're going to pay for a cleaning later that's not, you're not going to like the price. So use it when you can, and don't be afraid of it. And who was on which side, Sarah?
So the real answer is, I'm right, he's wrong.
That's exactly right.
That's like Sarah said the exact same thing. So you guys are kindred souls. Out of curiosity, what color is your truck?
It is ruby red.
Unbelievable. Camel and leather interior?
Of course, that's the only way.
That's the exact same truck we've got.
I'm
going to get up here from the studio in a minute and go make sure my truck's still in, or my wife's truck is still in the driveway. Yeah,
she's in Phoenix. We're in Payson.
Yeah.
But that just means that there's two crazy husbands that didn't do their due diligence and buy a Dodge.
Oh,
and that's the problem.
Mark.
I'll try not to be insulted. I love my truck.
Oh, come on.
I'm
teasing.
One more quick question?
Yes, ma'am.
It's in its break-in period. Is there anything I can do to improve the fuel mileage?
You can put a raw egg on the throttle pedal and not break it. And you will get the very best fuel economy. Or you can put a hot cup of coffee between your legs and fill the cup of coffee, and you'll get great fuel economy. Or you can have our wives ride with you and yell at you because both of them have gone through the test of fuel economy.
Great. So can I just call back later and have you make the Jake brake noise a couple of times for me?
Great. Sarah, just quick question. I'm assuming since it's red and since it's got camel leather, it's four-wheel drive.
Absolutely. Why wouldn't you have four-wheel drive?
Yeah, that's what my wife said when she ordered the truck. Even though her last three trucks had been two-wheel drive and she'd never gotten stuck.
Yeah.
But what type of mileage are you making?
Mixed driving, probably 19 and a half.
Okay, you're doing better than we are. Because we just drove 920 miles to come up here, and we averaged 17.
And let me tell you both, running empty, I'm at 17, 18, 19 in my Cummins, running empty. Mm-hmm. If I'm hauling a trailer and climbing hills, I'm at the 15.5, 15.8. And, of course, if I'm coming up to a hill and there happens to be any colored Ford next to my Dodge.
Oh,
and as we go up the hill, by the time I get to the hill, I'm in the 12-mile-per-gallon range. But the Ford is still 2 miles behind me, and I'm going to turn off your microphone because I got to take a break.
Thank you, Mark.
You betcha, Sarah. 602-508-0960. And Joe and JT, you stay right there because we're not going to mess around like we did this time, and we're going to get you guys on the other side of the break. But everybody else, we got time. 602-508-0960. Bob Key knows motorcycles. Bob Key knows lots of things, but he doesn't have a hard drive about cars and trucks that I do, but he does almost. So you get you get 1.5 brains for the price of one. 602-508-0960. I'm Mark Salem. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Welcome back, everybody. Mark Salem and Bob Key here at your service. And as we promised, we're going straight to Joe, and then we got some other business to take care of. And I have the end of the Ford dilemma, and you are not going to believe what I'm telling you. And I want to tell you, my shorts are so wadded up right now, I can't even see straight. But anyway, Joe, I'm happy to hear you. What can I do for you?
I've got a 2002 Chrysler Sebring V6. The brakes are getting abnormally warm even after a short amount of traveling and running the test and the diagnostics on it. It said small vacuum leak. Could this be the brake booster causing that engine light to come on, giving that reading, and making the front disc brakes run warm?
That's not anything I've ever seen before in my life. Let me ask you, how do you know the front brakes are warm?
Because you can't put your hand on the rotor.
Well, that's not good enough for me. I can drive my truck from here to Dairy Queen and back, and if I have two traffic lights to go, it's going to be too hot to touch. So I don't think that's good enough. Let's just deal with the vacuum leak right now. Or this. Tell me what the code says.
The code says aggregate. Evaporative emission system small leak.
All right, well, that has nothing to do with the brake system. It has nothing to do with the brake booster. The brake booster symptoms are very simple. If you have a brake booster leak, when you apply the brakes, the engine will start running rough because you just created a vacuum leak. In addition to that, when you apply the brakes, two things happen. The engine runs rough and the brake pedal turns hard. And so it takes much more effort to stop the car. So as you can see, you have two separate problems that you cannot and should not tie together. The evaporative system is a system that's supposed to suck the fumes off the tank and burn them through the engine. Obviously, we don't want to start sucking fumes off the top of the engine when you're starting and stopping because the fuel's sloshing around and we want vapor. We don't want liquid. So as a result of that, there's certain times we're supposed to do that. There's also sensors in the tanks that are likely to talk to the computer and say, oh, I see a vacuum on the tank. So in the event of an evaporative system, then most of us will simply just start charging the system with smoke, with dense white smoke looking for a leak. But right now you've got a situation where the computer thinks that there's a vacuum leak, but it entirely could be that because vacuum's coming into a valve and not going out of the other side of the valve, the computer thinks, oh, there's a leak. But in reality, there's a bad valve. Or we're not triggering the valve because we lost the ground. So the code doesn't mean anything except evaporative system. That's what it means. In the absence of any of those other things, then we're going to trace down the vacuum problem, and it could or could not. It could be the sensor in the tank that's not reporting a vacuum, so the computer thinks there is no vacuum, so it gives you the no vacuum code, when in reality it has a code, but the sensor's bad. So that's a code in your car. It tells you the problem is in Tennessee. You still have to find the city, the street, and the house number.
Yes.
And that's what you're going to have to do. So there's no correlation between your hot brake rotors and that code at all. Okay?
All right. But, I mean, it's warm to the point you can walk past the car and feel the heat.
Okay. Well, if you want to test your brakes, then I want you to pull out behind Bash's or Safeway tomorrow morning, on Sunday morning, and I want you to go, you know, running speed with your car. And I want you to hit the brakes as hard as you can. Skid the tires. And then put it...
Done.
Huh?
That's easily done.
Okay. And then get out of the car, put it in park, get out of the car and walk around, and the front skid marks should be twice as long as the back marks, and you should have both. So if the front skids did 18 inches, then the back should do somewhere around half of that. So if you've got good brakes on the front and the backs are working, then fine. But if the backs you can't get to skid, then what's happened is they're no longer in the system and they're forcing the front brakes to do a little bit more work. But I'm still telling you, if one of my technicians came in and said that the brake rotors are too hot, I would politely ask him to go sit in the bathroom, clear his head, and then go back out into the shop and talk to all the rest of the technicians, because they're going to laugh at him. So I'm not laughing at you. I'm just telling you the scientific stuff you're using is not scientific to me. So I know that you're walking by them and stuff.
1 minute.
And if you had where you were overloading the front brakes, it would have warped the rotors by now, and you would have a pulsating brake pedal. And I listen clearly for those kinds of symptoms so that I can bob and weave my way through the diagnosis. And so in the absence of any engine running rough and in the absence of any brake pulsation, then I'm not worried about your front brakes. Anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. My name's Bob, his name is Bob Key, and my name is Mark Salem. But when we come back, the first thing I'm going to tell you is a practical joke that's been played on us that I've never had anybody get me as good as Bob and I just got good just a few minutes ago. Because at the end of the day, here's the true story. The lady with the red Ford, whose name was Sarah, and we laughed because this was something that we had just discussed as a family and as friends, was his damn wife out on the back patio with my wife's cell phone pretending to be someone else.
And she suckered both of us big time.
Big time. And so we have taken their purses and hidden them with the credit cards. They're no longer allowed to go to Pine to look at antiques. We've taken their cars' keys apart, and until we calm down, they're not going anywhere.
And
I've never had that bad in all my life.
And they'll have no conjugal visits.
No, I'm not going there. Anyway, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Mark Salem and Bob Key here helping you with your car problems. And we've got a little business to take care of, so let me do that real quick. Action Auto is on my list of best car repair shops. You can find that list at marksalem.com. Action's on I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom is a family-owned, family-service, full-service auto repair shop that started in Deer Valley in the North Phoenix area in 1983. I've known Tom as early as 1979 or 1980. So these guys are gray-haired guys. They've been working on cars. They've been around a long time for one good reason. It's because they treat their customers fairly and they know how to fix cars, and those are two important things I think you'll agree with. So whatever your repair needs, Tom and his staff are well-known for quality workmanship, great customer service, a fast turnaround time. He has ASC Master Certified Technicians. He's got a Beamer Master Certified Technician. So if you live anywhere in the Deer Valley, North Phoenix area, and you got a Beamer, and you want to try somebody who's worked on Beamers before for a long, long time, then maybe Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. Tom number one. I got two Toms, but we're taking the one that's waited the longest. Tom number one, how can I help you?
Hi. I've got a 2002 Dodge Windstar, and the compass is like 180 degrees off. Can you help me out?
Yeah. I'm 99% sure that you're going to unplug it, plug it in, but there's going to be a procedure in your owner's manual that describes exactly how you recenter that, and it involves this. You need to drive in a circle, probably clockwise and counterclockwise. Is your wife listening right now by chance?
No.
Okay. Well, she needs to be on the hood of the car, hanging on to the windshield wiper.
I've done that numerous times.
You've already done that?
Yeah. Would putting a new radio in have done anything to it?
I don't think
I'm
so.
Okay.
All right. Oh, yeah. 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 I just did my truck because I had the windshield replaced. And I noticed that when I drive north on 87, and it's always been north, it didn't show north. So I looked at my owner's manual, and it had me do circles in a parking lot to the left and to the right and stuff like that. And supposedly the compass will see this and be able to find north and find east and west. And so whatever the reason, it fixed it. So I think it's as easy as... Now, there's probably going to be a wire connection up there. And I probably wouldn't disconnect it until I'm told to disconnect it, because it's going to be fragile. Because, in fact, your particular vehicle is, 16 years old. I'm concerned that the plastic connector will break and you'll have a bad connection there. So don't disconnect it unless you're told. And if you need to disconnect it, I want you to just disconnect the negative cable and stay away from the compass, and I want you to walk away with it for 2 or 3 minutes. And it'll also wipe out your radio presets and your seat presets, but that's okay. I'd much rather do that than disturb that connection up there that's been in the sun for a long time. Okay?
Wait a minute. Disconnect what? The battery?
The negative cable, yeah.
On the battery, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know what you were talking about. Positive and negative up on the compass.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you, Tom. And
thank
Tom
you.
Number two. Tom number two, how can I help you?
We got a lot of Toms today, fellas.
Yeah.
I wanted to, first of all, have a question for Bob and to see if he knew Jim Avery in Kerrville, Texas.
That's a really small world. When we had
Isn't
our...
It?
Yes, I do know Jim. I know his son.
Good.
Know the family. Jim was an automotive customer of ours for years.
Was he really?
Yep, when we had Key Motors, and he went through Volvos and Mercedes, and I think a BMW here and there. But,
That is so cool. When I was in college, my buddy and I, Jim was my buddy's uncle, and we drove down to Kerrville from the University of Iowa on spring break, and had the time of our lives down there.
Okay, hold it just a minute. This is a car show, and we're not going to talk about spring break activities.
All right.
You know what? You guys are on the verge of getting me fired, so I'm going to...
Well, okay.
You know what?
Right, I'll jump right into the question.
Okay.
And then I'll give you all the gory details off air.
Okay.
But... I've got a 2006 Mercury Mountaineer, And the airbag icon has been intermittently coming on, not every day, but a few times a week.
Okay.
For a short period, and then it will go off. Do I need to be concerned about that?
Yes. When the airbag light's on, the airbag system is down.
So all right.
That's we need to deal with that. How many miles are on the Mountaineer?
112,000.
And are you the primary driver or your wife?
Yes. Yeah, my wife and I.
Okay. More than likely, I want you to understand that there's a clock spring underneath the steering wheel because we need to keep constant contact with the steering wheel and the airbag on the steering wheel. So we have this rotating device that looks like a big clock spring. And so as you turn left and right, it tests and tensions the clock spring, but the clock spring allows the computer to maintain, the event data recorder and the black box. It allows it, which deploys your airbags, to maintain contact with the steering wheel and the airbag. So what I want you to do is play around with this. I want you to take your hand and hit the top of the steering wheel. You start it up, and you're waiting for your wife. She went in to get her six-pack of beer, case of beer.
Yes.
So you hit the top of the steering wheel when it's running. The light's off. You hit the top of the steering wheel, and maybe you turn it, a quarter turn, and you hit the bottom of it. If you can get the light to come on as you mess with the steering wheel, you need a new clock spring. Now, us, we're going to connect to the computer, and we're going to say, oh, do you see the airbag? Yes, I do. And we're going to sit there and play with the steering wheel, and then pretty soon it goes, oh, I lost the airbag. And then we'll know it's a clock spring. So then we're going to pull the horn pad. We're going to pull the airbag off. We're going to disable the air system so we don't deploy that $1,000 airbag, which costs us $1,000 to put your airbag in because we deployed it. Then we're going to replace the clock spring, and the wire goes down the column, and it's going to be tough to get that there. And we're going to have to wave our magic wand, swing a duck around our head, knock on the hood three times, and we'll put the clock spring back in. And that's a once every 100,000-mile repair about. So,
is that fairly expensive, Mark?
No, the part isn't. The labor's going to be probably $100 or $200, and I'm just guessing.
All right.
But the part isn't. Okay. And in most automotive parts, it's 50-50 parts and labor. And this is going to be a little bit different. Going to guess that the clock spring's going to be a little less than the labor.
All right, great.
Okay.
All right, it was a big help, and we'll talk later about spring break.
Excellent.
Thank you very much for that. Thank you very much. This portion of Unhooded is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Thompson, Brian, and Thelma have been around in Mesa in the car repair business, but not only but their parents have, and then other people in their family have, aunts and uncles as well. So it's not like Brian and Thelma were just introduced to auto repair. They've been there all their life. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley. They've been around a very long time, since 1970. They're like either second or third generations of the Thompson family. You only need to meet Brian and Thelma, shake their hand to know why I tell you there is no way in God's green earth that they're going to take advantage of you. And that goes really much for all of them. But Brian and Thelma, by looking at them and shaking their hands, you will know in a heartbeat. He doesn't look like Wyatt Earp, and she doesn't look like Annie Oakley. But I'm telling you, they are the kind of people you hope are your neighbors, and they're the kind of man, of course Brian's married, that you want your daughter to bring home, and Thelma is the kind of lady you want your son to bring home. Although they're still married. And they're still married and been married for a long time. So from Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, on Main Street, just east of Stapley, that's the only shop in Mesa that's been able to pass the muster and the testing I put them through to be called the best car repair shops. So, do we have any other callers, Gil?
Lines are open.
And I want to tell you that our wives are not allowed, and Gil is on high alert. So there's no way they're going to be able to call in the show again. And Renee's grounded. She just doesn't know for how long. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And I think we had another rodent thing.
Hey, I wanted to mention something about
it. Let me get the rodent thing real quick because I know it's on my phone.
Okay.
The reason rodents like the insulation on wires is because it's produced with peanut oil. I didn't know that. And so it's very much a dessert for the little vermins. And this is from a guy who has my cell phone, and I trust his judgment. I also trust his computer capabilities that he Googled this because probably didn't know it. And so he Googled it, and he answers the question that I couldn't. Why do rodents, gophers, and mice like the wiring, the rubber on the outside, and it's made with peanut oil? Balls in your court.
I was just going to share that back in the 90s, when we had our automotive shop in Kerrville, we had this couple, and she drove an 87 Honda Accord. And she came in one day for service, and she said to Sarah, who was writing up the ticket, she said...
Your ex-wife.
Yeah, my now ex-wife, right? She said, I want you to check into something, because if I take the fan on the air conditioning past blower speed 2, the dash starts to vibrate. Well, we knew right away what it was, because that vintage Accord had a large enough drain tube for the evaporator that the mice would crawl up the drain tube and nest inside the blower case.
Which would throw it out of balance.
Yes, as the nest increased in size, often to traumatic levels of vibration. So we gave her a quote to pull the blower motor and clear the nest, and we had a spray that tend to minimize odor, and then we put a little screen with a zip tie on the condenser tube. So she shares it with her husband, Art, and Art's too cheap. And Art says, nah, I'm not going to spend that money. You just keep the blower at 2 or below. So she's headed down into town one morning, and the sun's out and it's hot. Without thinking, she slams the blower up to 4. And in about 15 seconds, little baby mice start flying out of the vents. Because the mouse family has reproduced.
Yes.
She pulled over to the curb. She grabbed her phone and she says, Art, come bring me your truck, you cheap guy. And she didn't talk to him for like 3 days.
Oh, Art was in big trouble.
He was in
and
big
she,
trouble.
And she paid the bill, and she probably added twice as much to it because he needs to be punished while she goes to Woolworths or Nordstrom's, whatever you have in Kerrville, Texas.
To do spite shopping.
Yes, exactly. You know, that's happened so many times. We had, at 602-508-0960, the lines are wide open, and we've got another hour to go, so you're welcome to call in, 602-508-0960. Lady comes in and says, I had a gas smell. So we go through the hood area. She doesn't really know where it's coming from. I said, can I have a trunk key? No, I don't have it. So she comes in 2 or 3 times for the gas smell, and we just can't find it, but she never has a trunk key. So at the last minute, Eddie says, I'm opening that damn trunk. So we pulled the back seat down, and with a long screwdriver, we grabbed a hold of the latch and popped it. Inside the trunk was this styrofoam cooler with a 1 gallon gas can that had tipped over. So the entire styrofoam cooler was all over the thing. The other thing that was inside of there was a paper bag filled with ladies' lingerie. And she was on her way to Goodwill with the ladies' lingerie. And she didn't want us to see the ladies' lingerie in the trunk. So we took out the ladies' lingerie. And we auctioned that off to the staff. We cleaned up the gasoline and all the stuff. And there was nothing you could do. You just had to let it air out. Through the grace of God, she was out of town. So we just set it out in the parking lot with the trunk open and all the windows and doors and stuff. And actually, we put an electric blower in the front to blow out the back. So when she came back, we just told her we found a fuel leak underneath the back and that we fixed it. And it was years later she said to me, you lied to me about a repair.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what she was saying. And I said, well, if I did, I'm sorry. But I don't usually do that. And she smiled and she winks and she says, did my underwear excite you guys? And I said, no, I made money on it. I But anyway, that was one of those things. Like you say, you got rodents in the car and all of a sudden they're coming out of the vents because you ignore the obvious symptoms.
Right.
So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem. Bob Key from Kerrville, Texas is sitting here next to me. He has automotive background. Plus, he's in the motorcycle business. And he sells those Can-Ams that are turbocharged that are between 27 and 32,000, depending on how you deck them out. They'll pull a wheel stand in Tucson and follow it all the way to Phoenix. They're faster than my Razor Polaris, and that kind of makes me mad. He sells Suzukis. He sells Can-Ams. He sells
Yamaha.
And
what
else?
A lot of pre-owned.
And a lot of used to stock.
Yeah.
And the Kerrville, Texas is called the...
Hill country
of Texas, and that's where lots of affluent people play, but it's also got a big playground. Mm-hmm. And so motorcycles and off-road vehicles are very popular, very much like the Payson and the Rim country here in Arizona. 602-508-0960. We have another hour in the car show. Welcome to call us.
Welcome back, everybody.
My name is Mark Salem. Bob Key is sitting here next to me. The lines are wide open, so now's the time to give us a call. If you want to call, if you have a car problem, the lines are wide open. You can be first, second, third, fourth, fifth, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by one of the shops that's on my best car repair shops list that can be found at marksalem.com, Kurtz Auto Repair. Kurtz is one of those guys that he's up at I-17 in Bell. And he's one of those guys that if somebody's in that geographical area and they start off the story with, nobody can fix my car, I've had it to da 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 da, I can send them to Kurtz. Lady calls in and says, two shops told me I need an engine. Kurt fixes it for $120. She's now a customer for life. She loves Kurtz. Of course, he's married too. But the bottom line is he didn't take her money. He fixed her oil pressure switch. And two shops said that this lady needed $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 worth of engine work. So it's a good idea to go to a good shop, and it's a good idea if you live near I-17 and Bell to go to Kurtz Automotive. He's a Better Business Bureau Ethic Award winner. He opened his doors in 1987. He's got gray hair. He works on domestic import, gas, and diesel. His ASC-certified technicians know what they're doing. And Jeff and Eric, which is the service manager and the lead tech, are both master technicians. It's like Kurt is a master technician. So you've got three guys with lots of experience that basically have a master's degree in automotive repair. So that's Kurtz Automotive, I-17 and Bell. Now, there's another good thing about Saturday's show. We don't have to listen to the dribble Monday through Friday of women peeing on one another and videotapes and all kinds of war strikes and liars and fake news and all that kind of stuff. We don't have to hear that. This is a car show. So if you have a car issue, a car problem, if there's an argument between your wife and your husband about whether you should turn the air off at red lights or not, we can help you with that. 602-508-0960.
Vicky is your first caller, Vicky.
Vicky, good morning to you. Vicky, you're first, and I'm happy to see you. What can I do for you?
Oh, I just have a question about oil, and as I understand it, you're a knowledgeable, educated expert on oil.
More than the average bear.
Okay, I've always used full synthetic in my Cherokee, and I've used Castrol Edge ever since it first came out. 10W30, I think, is what my Jeep calls for. When I go to buy it, because, of course, my local garage doesn't carry it, the one that changes oil for me, they ask me if I want the high mileage. And I at what point, my Cherokee uses no oil, burns no oil, drips no oil, at what point do you decide that you need to go with the high mileage Castrol Edge?
Never. Never, never,
oh,
never.
Okay.
So it's a marketing strategy. So as your car gets older, it's going to use a little oil, and we're going to go in with this magic high-mileage oil, and we're going to rejuvenate all the rubber components and make them brand new. We're going to make your motor love you. We're going to make your motor just say, gosh, Vicky, I love you when you start it up in the morning. And mobile has a high mileage, and everybody has a mileage, and it's going to eliminate car constipation, and the rats and the gophers are not going to eat your wiring. So, as you can see, I'm telling you, I've been around the block with oil. I've been trained by Valvoline. I presently sell Chevron. I am well aware. But let me ask you a couple of questions, because I'm kind of enamored about your use of synthetic. How often do you change it?
Every 5,000 miles.
Shame on you. Shame on you. You are part and parcel of our oil-dependent problem, and I'm teasing you, but I'm serious. Let me explain. There's three kinds of oil: conventional, Mother Nature oil our parents had. Then there's a blend, which is a blend of a portion of synthetic and conventional. No one will tell you what the blend is, but it's not going to be 50-50. Okay, oh. 70-30, 80-20, something like that. So a blend or a semi-synthetic, those are synonymous words, is half and half, and then you have a full synthetic. The big difference between the three has to do with when it turns to a tar. That, don't worry about that. And when it turns from a solid to a liquid, or a liquid to a solid on the cold side, but don't worry about that, because we're talking about temperatures of minus 15 to minus 60, and I'm quite sure we don't have those around here. But here's the real big difference, Vicky. How many miles a year do you drive?
Oh, I don't know. It's got 251,000 miles, and it's a 21-year-old Jeep.
Okay.
So a little over 10,000 miles a year.
Yeah, 10 or 11,000.
Okay. All right. So here's what you really should do, Vicky.
Synthetic oil starts at 8,000 on the change interval and goes to 10 or 12. So why wouldn't Vicky just do one oil change a year? This is if you were my sister and I loved you, unlike a couple of sisters I have, okay? So if you were my sister or my mother, I would say, Mom, Vicky, I want you to change your oil in April every year. I want you to go 10,000 miles. I want you to check your oil the last half of the year to make sure we don't get, use any oil and we don't drop below the ad mark. That's all. Just drop below the ad mark. We've got to stop. We got to add some. So I want you to do it in April. I want you to go through the summer with fresh oil. I don't care about the winter in Arizona. And I want you to change your oil one time a year. That's what you should be doing. You're putting premium oil in there, but you're only getting half the value. If you wanted to, Vicky, semi-synthetic or blended oil goes from 5 to 7,500. So if you want to stick with the 5, I want you to buy the blended Castrol. And that's good for 5,000.
Oh, but I don't want to change what's worked for a quarter of a million miles.
Okay. Well, let me tell you something. Your motor has no idea whether you put horse urine or butter or whether you put cooking oil in your engine. It doesn't know, it doesn't care, it doesn't have a brain, and you can change the brand, the viscosity, and conventional semi-synthetic every time you do your oil change, and nothing's going to happen. And let me change the question, Vicky. Hey, Mark, have you ever seen a problem that necessitated minor or major spending of my dollars related to somebody moving from Tucson, where they used Valvoline, and they moved up to Phoenix, and the shop uses Chevron or Castrol? And the answer is no. Have you ever seen anybody that had a problem that was related to moving from a semi-synthetic to a synthetic or a brand one to brand two? No. Now, people will blame that on there, but never mind that they just overheated their motor and cooked it, but they blamed it on the oil, when in reality the lower hose blew off, the cooling system failed, and they kept driving it thinking they could drive another 7 miles home. So I'm telling you, it's okay what you do. It's your money. But you're throwing away perfect – you're throwing away the milk 2 weeks before it's due. You're using oil – and you're not getting the value out of it. So you got two choices. Continue what you're doing because it's your money, or go longer. You could go to 7,500 miles, or you could go to 8,000 miles, and you're still going to be fine with your synthetic. But your engine's not going to know the difference, and there's a cost savings because a synthetic oil change is going to be between $55 and $75 in our market. A semi-synthetic is going to be about $40, give or take, and a conventional is going to be between $30 and $40. So there's a dollar savings here if you'll time your annual mileage with the oil, which is what we do for our customers. And I can look at their records and know how many miles they drive. Now here, I got some people in and out with Tukey Vicky and in Mountain Park Ranch area that only go 3,000 miles a year. I put the cheapest doggone oil I can find in their car. I know it's going to go 3,000 miles. And I bring them in every April for an oil change, because that's what's in their best interest, and that's what I do for my mom or my dad. But not my sisters, but my mom and my dad. So, but I'm going to tell you what everybody's yelling in my ears right now. You don't mess with Success. She's got a quarter of a million miles on her Jeep. That in and of itself is a world record.
I was gonna comment that I'm impressed.
Yeah, I'm really impressed. But I hope I've answered your question. Your car won't care if you change, but it's okay if you want to go 5,000, and if you're doing 10, then you're changing your oil. Now, if you're going to change your oil every 5, twice a year, I want you to do it the beginning of April, the beginning of November. That's 6 months in between the beginning of the summer, the beginning of the winter.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Right when you worm your horses, when the seasons change.
How did you know that?
That, right.
That's exactly right.
Three cars, three horses.
Okay, all right. And let me ask you a question about worming your horses. What are you using, and are you rotating?
Ivermectin rotated with whatever that other one is.
I'm with you. I buy it from the Internet, and I buy a lot of it at a time, and I do ivermectin 4 times a year, but then there's four other ones, like Strongid and...
Yeah,
I don't remember the names, but I use one with ivermectin, two with ivermectin, three with ivermectin, four with ivermectin, and that's the time I get to, you know, spend some quality time with my horses.
And Vicky, Vicky, just in case you do have a horse that doesn't like the worming, my wife and I have 15 equine that are rescues and fosters, and amongst them we have five donkeys. And so we've got this mammoth donkey named Henry. He just turned 30, and he has never enjoyed the worming experience. So shortly after we got him, we found that if we took a warm tortilla and took the worming and just the center, rolled it up, he would eat it, and by the time he realized he'd been wormed, it was already down his throat.
Oh, what a great idea. I mean, I have a Mustang we have to tranquilize to do her feet.
Uh-huh.
And I strapped the syringe to the bit, put the bridle on her, squirted in her mouth, and, you know, an hour later she can barely move. And I do that with the wormer, but, oh, my gosh, that's so much better idea.
Yeah. And, you know, this is what people don't understand is the cowboy way. There's a many ways to accomplish the same.
Right.
My dad would have put a leather halter on, what's his name?
Henry.
Yep. And he would have hooked it to the bucket of the tractor.
To hold his mouth open.
And he would have held his head up.
Right.
And he would have got his feet about an inch off the ground, his front feet.
Right.
And then he would have taken that doggone syringe.
Right.
But you're using the tortilla.
Mm-hmm.
And she's using it a different way. But that's what we're missing today is we're missing the ability to improvise. And it's just one way. And
one
if it
minute.
Doesn't work the one way, it's somebody's fault.
Right.
But Vicki, thank you for calling. And
thank
you for loving horses, because those are God's animals as much as mice and gophers, and they're a lot more responsive. And all they do is you put money in the front and you get poop out the back, and what could be better than that? So thank you, Vicki. And we have open lines. Right, Gil? Do we have open lines?
I've got a couple of callers.
Oh,
Stephen and Rush? Yes.
Stephen and Rush, you're on my number one and number two. We're going to be gone for about 3 minutes. And we've got three open lines, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. And like we promised, we're going to go straight to the phones because Tom's there.
Steve.
I'm sorry. I'm just not kind of combobbled today. Steve, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hi, good morning, guys. I have a 2004 Honda Accord with just over 100,000 miles on it. And I just had moved here from the Midwest. And the car is mechanically in really good shape. I'm just wondering, just recently, since we've been here, when I've turned on the air conditioning, I've noticed that it's been noisier. It sounds, you know, a little different. And all I'm wondering is, 14-year-old car with, you know, some miles on it, is increased noise a possible danger sign of bad things to come?
Okay, it's going to be an expensive issue, but the question is the noise coming from behind the glove box or down by the passenger feet, or is it definitely engine related? And as you rev the engine up, the noise accelerates and falls back down.
It's engine related, and it doesn't. I've had it, you know, parked and it's just, you know, running and you know, so no accelerating or anything.
Okay.
And it when it sort of kicks on, it seems noisier.
Okay. All right. So is the noise only with air conditioning application, or is it just...
Yes.
Okay.
Only AC.
So when you turn it off, there is no noise?
Correct.
Okay. It's most likely a compressor, but it could also be anything on that circuit, because when you turn the air on, you load that belt big time. So if it has an idler pulley or if it's driving a water pump or something like that, that additional load will cause a noise. I think what I would do if I were you, do you have a long-handled screwdriver?
I do.
Okay. You get your wife, make sure she likes you, because you're going to be underneath the hood and you don't want her to run over your toes. So you get her in the car and you tell her, you know, I'm going to tell you to just turn the air on, turn the air off, turn the air on, turn the air off. I want you to take that long-handled screwdriver and touch the compressor with it. And then you have her turn the compressor on and off.
Now, just clarify, you want them to use the metal end on the compressor and then the plastic
on the screwdriver.
Or screwdriver, rather.
Yep.
The metal end on the compressor, and then to put his hand around the plastic end.
Yep, and just kind of hold it.
Yep, to make a little speaker.
Well, and he's and he can put it to his ear if he wants, but I think he's going to be able to feel if the vibration and the noise is coming from the compressor.
Okay.
I think it's going to be aggravated. Now, if it's there, then there might be some spinning, and if you can safely, what I don't want to happen is for the fan to bite the screwdriver and shove it through the condenser and the radiator, because I've just cost you $500-$600. So be careful.
No. Yeah.
So just reach. I think you can reach down and just touch it. Now, you're not going to touch the front third of the compressor. You're going to touch the body of it, on, off, on, off, on, off. If you feel it at the compressor, then I think if I were you, the question, Bob, is does he address the compressor this summer or next summer? And we're talking about $1,500 to $2,000 on the top end.
Right.
On the top end.
That's what I figured.
Well, the problem you run into, and I think the basis of Mark's question here, is that you don't want that compressor to shrapnel. Because if it does fly apart, then we've got pieces and parts throughout the AC system that we're going to have to work hard and expensive to get out.
We're going to have to flush the entire system, get the metal out, change the oil. It's going to be a bigger deal. There's going to be some kind of a screen in there that will give us the composition of how much metal we have. But he just came from the East.
Yeah. So one question, Steve. You said you had moved from the Midwest. What's the rust situation on the car look like?
It's generally pretty good, actually. The body is relatively clean. There's some rust on the front hood, a little bit on the front edge, and I took it to a body shop guy here when I got here, and he gave me what I thought was some really good advice. He said, just wait 6 months, be here 6 months, let this car dry out, and let's see what else is there before we attack the rust. And I really thought that was a good piece of advice, so that's what I'm waiting to do.
Okay. I'm of the opinion that this car is an 04, so it's 14 years old. You got 100,000 miles on it. If you don't overheat this car, run it low on oil, it'll go 300. So if you, let's look at that from the cost per month. If you look at the big picture, I'd leave the rust alone. I'd drive this car until it died. I'd put the title on the dashboard, put the keys in the ignition, and call Uber.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's exactly what I'm trying to decide.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I think. My mechanic back home told me this car will go forever.
Right.
Run it to death. And then this, for the first time, I've never heard the sound. But when you mentioned other drain on that, I'm starting to think recently I've noticed some slowness in the power steering. Would that be tied into that?
Well, and that's why I ask you.
Yeah.
Because
I never even thought about it.
Okay.
That clicked in my head.
Well, and see, I've been doing this since 1988, so now I'm going to step into a different arena. I want you to turn the air on and off, turn the air on and off. Then I want you to turn the air off and turn the steering wheel a full turn left, a full turn right, and feel and touch and see if the noise comes back. And then I want you to rev it up and down and then if I were working on your car, after I isolated the compressor or if I did the compressor test, the next thing I would do is the power steering swing, and then the next thing I would do is get the garden hose out and just hose down all the belts. Because if everything goes away, we got a dry belt. We got a very old belt, and my personal opinion is 8 years, 80,000 miles with belts and hoses, and I'll bet yours might be original.
They actually were changed not too long ago, so
okay.
Everything's been, you know, so.
All right.
Is Thunderbird, the guys on Thunderbird, that's a good place to go to have me take a look.
88th Avenue and Thunderbird?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
when you go in there, just tell them, I saw Mark Salem at a bar the other day, and he was drunker than a hoot owl, and he said, you guys are good, and that makes me a little leery, but I thought I'd try you anyway. That's what I'd say. And you're welcome to use it.
I'm sure they've heard that
before. Yeah, right. They haven't heard it before.
Yeah, the guy says, well, that's our ninth referral like that this week. Yeah.
No, sometimes I say, tell Tom, and other shops, tell Tom that you met me in jail.
Right.
And you were only there a day and I was there a week or whatever. Just something to break
the
ice.
Something
to break the ice. So anyway, yes, I agree, Steve. I think you should have somebody else look at it. The question is, how much are you going to charge me to tell me, let me demonstrate this noise, how much are you going to charge me to tell me where this noise is and how much it's going to cost to fix it? That's the discussion that needs to happen, okay?
Gotcha. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, you very much, Steve. And I'm going to put here T-O-T-T Bird. Okay, who's next?
Rush.
Good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I'm enjoying your show so much. I listen to you as much as I can on Saturdays.
Thank you very much.
Really quick scenario for you. Summer's coming up. I've got a 2004 Jeep Liberty. Last year, at the end of summer, the idler bearing went out. It took the belt out, the serpentine belt. I replaced that, and it overheated, of course. And then when we were stopped at intersections for 5 minutes, the temperature would go way up. And eventually the water pump failed, and I replaced that. Now we're coming up on summer again. I don't know that the fan in front of the radiator is working properly, because I've already, when we hit 100 degrees, overheated.
Okay, but wait a minute. I need you to describe overheat for me, okay? I want to know the gauge.
Overheated.
Wait, no. I get to ask this question. The gauge. I know. I want you to draw a half mark, and then I want you to draw a mark that represents red, and I want to know, do you have a three-quarter mark?
No, we have an extreme end red zone, and during the entire winter, it never crossed the midpoint.
Okay. It's supposed to run half to three-quarters. It's supposed to run half to...
Yeah, the temperature never went over half.
It doesn't make any difference. Well, it's not supposed to run. It's supposed to run over half. So if it never went over half, then it's got a 160 or 180 thermostat in it, and it should not have that. Or somebody's got no thermostat in it. I'm telling you, 24/7, that car should run between half and three quarters, and anything less than half, you're causing damage to the engine because you're not boiling the water out of the oil, so you're going to sludge up that motor, and pretty soon sludge is going to come oozing out of the tailpipe, and you're going to say, gosh, Salem knew what he was talking about. I don't care anything about it. I want you to know okay is between half and three quarters. And the fan in front of the radiator is likely to be triggered by AC application. So if you want to see if it's working, I'm saying likely, I'm guessing here, then you turn on the air conditioning and you go drive it for a while, and then you get the fan to run, and then if you turn off the air and the fan shuts off, Mark's right. It's not temperature controlled, it's AC controlled. So that's how it works. I got to run. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Automatic Transmission Exchange. They've been rebuilding and repairing transmissions in the Phoenix area since 1968. That's likely to be before many of us were born. Many of you, many of us. Okay, give me a break here.
Yeah.
Phil and his staff are transmission diagnostic experts. Transmission repairs, replacements, leaks, shift problems is all in the wheelhouse of Automatic Transmission Exchange. They do OEM work, so they put it back the way they found it, and better. They put it back the way it was new, so every transmission is thoroughly tested on their new state-of-the-art dynamometer. So if you live in Phoenix, then 40th Street in Washington is the place where Automatic Transmission Exchange lives, and they've been there since 1968. Let's go to the phones. Bill, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark.
Hey.
Thanks for your station. years ago, I had a car that was attacked by mice or rats, and they ate and then destroyed my ignition wires. And right now, I'm required to park adjacent to an open field, and I'm concerned about another attack by mice or rats. Is there anything I can do to prevent that?
Yeah, I want you to get on the internet, and I want you to look for rodent tape.
Rodent tape.
Yeah, and
okay.
We use that. It's 65 feet of tape for $33, but you can wrap it around your ignition wires. You can wrap it around wire harnesses. You can wrap it around a lot of things. Now, there's other things that you can use for rodents and mice and stuff. They don't like dryer sheets, and they don't like cayenne pepper, red hot chili pepper. So my wife will sprinkle her flowers where the rabbits eat it. She'll sprinkle the flowers with cayenne pepper, and they won't touch it. And we have a horse property up north, and we use the dryer sheets now underneath some of our tractors and our cars to try to keep the gophers and the squirrels and stuff that away from our wiring. And we've been pretty successful. So, but rodent tape.
Rodent paper. What was the other thing?
Dryer sheets. You know those scented dryer sheets that you put into your dryer when you dry your clothes and it makes your clothes smell good?
Oh, okay.
You buy a box of those, and they may have 20, 30, 40, 50 sheets in there. So, you know, you put four of them around at the corners, and you put a rock on top of them, and hopefully that'll drive them away because they don't like the smell of the sheets.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Hey, you're welcome. Thank you very much. Glenn, you're up next. Glenn, how can we help you?
Hi, Mark. I really enjoy your variety show today.
You know what? Yeah, I agree with you, but there's a strong possibility that Monday morning it's Mark. What are you doing this morning? Nothing, General Manager. Would you stop by my office today? So if that's the case, I'm a big boy. Raise my hand. But anyway, thank you, and what can we do for you?
Well, you've covered spring breaks, rodents, lingerie, horse warming.
Yes.
Can-Am's doing wheelies.
Yes, yes. Yes. Yes.
I have a question about your wife.
Okay. Sure.
We'll take it.
What fertilizer does she use on her flowers?
She uses a 10-10-10. Now, let me explain, and I'm sure somebody's going to call me and correct me, but this is what I understand from the cowboys that have been using fertilizers their whole lives. The first number represents the top of the plant. The second number represents the middle of the plant above the ground, and the third number represents the root food. So I'll give you another example. I use a 41-00 for my horse pastures. 41 is the top of the plant. That's called urea. I mean to tell you, you would never sprinkle urea on your grass at home because that grass would grow a foot a week, and you would hate me for that, but for horses, it's ideal. Plus, urea doesn't hurt the horses. So I put it down in pellet form. I flood irrigate my pastures, and boom, I got grass coming out of my ears. Well, I got hair out of my ears, too.
I was going to comment on that.
Yeah, but in your particular case, I can answer for Renee. It's 10-10-10 or some derivative of that. If it's going to be 12-10-8, go ahead. But 10-10-10 is what she uses for her flowers because that's what I buy at Walmart.
Thank you for that. I don't even have flowers.
Okay, okay.
But I had a car question.
Okay, sure.
You are so funny. I have a about an 8-year-old Toyota Tundra with 60,000 miles. And about 75% of the time at cold start, I have a high-pitched screeching, I'm assuming coming from something in the front end of the motor.
Okay.
I don't know really if there's any secrets to diagnosing that, or since it's only at a cold startup, maybe I have to leave the car overnight somewhere.
Well, yeah, but you can diagnose it if you want. Pop the hood, get a spray can of water, a bottle of water that your wife may spray water on the ironing she does, if your wife does ironing like mine does. So what you do is you just spray down one belt before you start it.
It's just a serpentine.
Yeah, okay, then spray the back side of the serpentine first, and then spray the rib side. And if it's the belt or belt-related, that's going to change the noise. And that will help you. And then you're going to pull the belt off, and you're with your Devos, your fingers, you're going to spin all the idler pulleys and the water pump pulley, all that you can spin, and you're going to spin them. And as you spin them, if it goes and it's like grinding up rocks, then you'll know that that's where the noise is at. And if they all spin true, then I'd replace the belt. It's 8 years old, 60,000 miles, and I think you heard me tell you earlier, my personal recommendation to all my customers, and I change my wife's belts and hoses on 8 years and 80,000 miles. And I'll tell you why. The motors that we replace for thousands and thousands of dollars have belts and hoses that are way past that. They failed. The people ignored the red light and drove until the motor cooked itself from the inside out. So I'm just of the opinion, if you want to play the odds and roll the dice, fine. But as far as I'm concerned, Mark's personal recommendation, and I've been in Arizona all my life, is 8 years and 80,000, and you kind of fit in that area. So it might not be a bad idea just to replace the belt.
Yeah, I don't know if it's been replaced since I bought it used recently, and I'll have to look at I was just hoping it would be a belt rather than some other wheel spinning in there that makes that high-pitched screeching.
Well, and if you took it to a regular repair shop that knew what they were doing, the first morning they'd start it and they'd hear it and they'd probably try some water. The second morning they're going to start it without the belt on it.
Okay.
And then they're going to do spinning all the things. So, yeah, it's a two-start process if we can have your car for two cold mornings, okay?
Very good. Thank you.
You betcha. And, Tom, if you'll stay right there, I promise to get you, but it's 40 minutes after the hour, and Gil's yelling at me, and he's using bad words. And I some of these words I haven't heard before, but we'll be back in a minute. Welcome back, everybody. Let's see what time it is. 44 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, and we're going to go to Tom because he's been waiting. And Tom, you're up first. How can I help you?
Great show, Mark.
Thank you.
On your last caller, I have a 2006 Duramax with only 80,000 miles on it. So you recommend replacing the hoses and belts on that too?
Yes, sir.
Not?
Yes, sir, I do. Because it's just the belt and hose isn't going to fail when it's convenient to you. And if you're on your way to some kind of a call, the tendency is I think I can make it to my next stop, and that's where we end up cooking motors. So now, in your particular case, you said you got an 06, so you're 12 years old, and then you got 60,000 miles, yes?
80,000.
You're over on years. You're right at it with respect to mileage. So I'm going to tell you, you only have two choices. You either do it this year, or for sure you do it a year from April. You don't want two summers on that truck. If you want to roll the dice, then this year, and I think you probably got a minimal chance of having a real failure, but I would definitely do it next year. I'd let my kids go to Disneyland with you this year in the summertime, but I sure as heck wouldn't put them in your truck after April next year. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Okay, another thing, tranny fluid, I mean, would you drop the pan on that also to change everything out, or?
Well, that's got an Allison in it, and
correct.
Oftentimes there's a spin-on filter on the side of the case, and I'd follow the owner's manual. I'm not quite sure what yours said, but on my Duramax, my 0506 Duramax, I'd spin the filter off annually, and depending on my miles, when I got up to the 25,000 range, I'd pull the pan and change the fluid if it didn't have a drain plug. And it's got, I'm pretty sure it's got two filters. It's got one underneath the pan, in the pan, and then it's got a spin on the outside. So you can play with the two filters however you want. But certainly I would want the inside filter changed at least once a year and maybe twice a year.
Okay.
And you can spin that little one off on the outside as much as you want, and you're going to add a half a quart after.
Now, if I do drop the pan, do you recommend Transcend oil or not?
No, you can.
What would you recommend?
Transcend is the Allison transmission. It's kind of like the GM oil and Motorcraft Ford. You can do just the same in the aftermarket with a synthetic transmission fluid. It's not going to make any difference. Your transmission is not going to know the difference, and all the premiums have all the different attributes of Transcend. The only reason why you'd use Transcend is if you had a new motorhome and you had a new Allison, and they'll extend your warranty if you use their oil. So if and that's something I haven't done myself, and so I don't think that's a good reason to spend so much money for the Transcend. So if I were you, I'd use a Delo, a Chevron, their Valvoline synthetic stuff, something like that.
Okay, appreciate that, Mark.
Okay, good luck to you, Tom.
Keep up the great work. Thank you.
Thank you. And real quick, I'm going to tell you about Larry Harker's Auto. He's at 38th Avenue and Indian School, been there since 1967. Bob and Ellen are really good people, and Bob is one of the best diagnosticians I've ever met in my life. I would venture a guess that he's better than I am. He's certainly not any older than I am, but he just has tenacity that I'm missing when it comes to diagnosing cars. While I might be a 9.5 on a 1-10 scale, he's a 15 on a 1-10 scale. He just has tenacity and the presence of mind to be able to pull it off. He has a tremendous skill set with respect to knowing how cars work. So, but he also does oil changes and all that other kind of stuff. So 38th Avenue and Indian School, Larry Harker's Auto, good place to go. And Pat, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking my call this morning. My dad was an airplane and car mechanic for 50 years. He's still with us, but he's out on the East Coast. I'm glad I could call your show for some advice.
Okay.
I've got a 2007 Jetta. I'm in it right now with 154,000 miles on it. It runs very well, but it's got that five-cylinder motor on it, 2.5. It runs very well. The air conditioning, though, takes a while to get cold. Right now it'll freeze you out of the car at highway speed. When you slow down in city traffic, it runs from warm to cold.
Okay.
What do you suspect? Is that a fluid change? Is that a compressor change?
No, it's not a compressor change because you said it blows ice cold on the highway speeds. When was the last time it was serviced?
It was serviced 2 years ago.
Okay.
I think the technology, and I don't know if 2 years ago they did this, but the technology today is, I want to tell you that years ago, ever since day one, ever since Jesus was a baby, we've not had a dipstick in the Freon system. It was by guess or by golly. Everybody had a different way to fill it, and everybody touched this and touched that and raised the motor and put a fan, and they had these specifications. And I want to tell you today, we have a piece of equipment that's been the most amazing piece of equipment that I've seen in the last 10 years. We're going to suck the Freon out of your Jetta. We're going to measure it, and we're going to look at the sticker. And the sticker calls for 20 ounces, and I'm not saying that it is 20. I'm going to use that for a round number. It calls for 20, and you have 13 and a half. I'm going to clean the 13 and a half you have. I'm going to filter it and get the metal out of it, and I'm going to get the oil out of it, and I'm going to put it back in, and I'm going to put another 6.5 ounces on top of it to bring you up to 20. The fee is going to be somewhere between 125, give or take $20. That covers everything.
Okay.
Now, I want to tell you, I personally have got calls from my customers and others that say when that has done, it made all the difference in the world. They said I had a guy with a Volvo the other day, and he was a little leery, and he was a first-time customer. And this is what I said to him. I looked him in the eye, and I said, hey, buddy, you're on your way to Tucson. If it isn't better, then don't even stop back on your way. So I'm going to put your ticket right over here, and if it's good, call me with your credit card. And if it's bad and you're coming back, just drive on by. And about 20 minutes into his trip to Tucson, he calls me and he says, go ahead and run my credit card. and he told me, he said, it's just wonderful. I think you should start there, and I'm betting that you're going to have success.
Pat, I got one question for you.
Do you think I can get that kind of service from the dealer?
Yeah, but I'm not guaranteeing that price.
No.
What part of town are you in?
I'm up by Carefree Highway and 17.
Okay, I'd go to Action Auto. I'd call him and ask him if he's got the electronic dipstick for Freon. But Kurtz or Action, Kurtz is at Bell and I-17.
Not. I tried to take my Jetta there for other problems on your recommendation in the past. They didn't want to service a Jetta right now. They don't have a guy that they felt confident to service the vehicle with.
And that's okay. That's a pretty good thing for a shop to do. And they've probably been bit by a Jetta.
Yeah, I appreciate that kind of honesty.
But now, did you say Action or Kurtz?
That was Action Auto.
Okay, then just
on Deer Valley.
Come on down to Kurtz. Call Jeff at Kurtz. He's a service manager, and say, hey, you got the electronic dipstick. Can you pull it out, measure it, put it back in, and fill it up? He's going to say yes, I'm pretty sure, and then make an appointment with him. So, all righty.
Wait. All right, Pat. One quick question: does it make any difference when you use Recirc or Fresh on the push button panel?
Let's see. I just switched it now. It appears to be just as cold with the Recirc off.
It's going to take a little longer. We want you to do it. We want you to be driving down the road. We don't care 45 or 65, or if you're on I-17, 115. And I want you to run 5 miles with Recirc and then 5 miles with outside. Now, with outside air, you got to crack the windows because that's called swamp cooler. Okay, we're taking outside air and cooling and putting it inside. But on Recirc, then the windows are up. That's what he's looking for. He's looking to change rather than just one in a 60-second period. Look at that. And what are you thinking?
Well, I'm just thinking that typically in the situations he's saying it's not as cold, stop and go driving, Recirc is going to get him a lower outlet temperature than the Fresh will because he's just recooling the interior.
Right.
And he doesn't have the movement across the condenser.
And you're right. And I like what you said, Bob. And Pat, in a situation, this is for everybody but Pat, Bob, and Mark. Recirc is like your house. We're filtering the air, and we're just circulating it through the house. But outside air or vent or whatever you want to call it is like a swamp cooler. So you have to have your windows open. We're going to blow cold air from outside, but we're going to take the heat out the window. So in your particular case, he's right. It would be a good idea. Now, the second thing would be is there a significant difference between 45 miles an hour and highway speeds? Mm-hmm. That could be a low Freon issue, but it could be others. But nevertheless, I still think spending $125, and I'm betting that that'll last you 3 years unless you have a leak, and I'm betting you'll be real happy with the results, and you'll be real happy with the price. Okay?
Hey, where is Kurtz located?
I-17 and Bell Northeast Corner. I-17 and Bell and Northeast Corner. Yeah.
Very familiar with it. You guys are doing a great job. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're more than welcome. S&S Tire is on the west side. And you want a tire shop that has your size in 3, 4, 5 different brands. So when you go in, you say, how much is a set of tires or two tires? And then he can say, well, good, better, best. And you can say, well, it's on the backside of a lease, so I'm getting ready to turn it in, so you don't want the best, and you don't want the really good ones. But on the other hand, you're going to give your 16-year-old daughter, and she's going to travel 20 miles to school, so maybe you want the best. One way or another, S&S, who is in Peoria, Surprise, and Goodyear, they have 3 locations. They've been around since 1976. They weren't born yesterday, and they got gray hair, and they might even have a hair or two coming out of their ears. That means we're seasoned, and we've been around the block. So S&S Tire, comprehensive line of tires, many different brands of tires. And if you think they got tires, or you think they may not have tires, and I'm over-exaggerating, let me tell you this. Wheelbarrows to tractors and everything in between. How does that grab you? So S&S Tires are going to balance it. Then they do alignments and suspension work, which is called support of new tires. And they do oil changes and stuff like that. So that's S&S Tires. All righty. Gil, we got anybody in queue?
Nope, all the lines are open.
Okay. We've touched a lot of bases today with respect to cars and stuff like that. I think there's people out there, and I think there's nobody in the middle. You either over-maintain your car or you under-maintain your car. I don't think there's middle. I don't think anybody hits the nail on the head, including me. But I think you'll agree that those are the two people, and in your motorcycle world, you probably have the same thing.
It's true. And, you know, we were talking about with a couple of callers today, how many miles a year do you put on?
Mm-hmm.
I've got a 2017 Jetta that I got in August, and I'm tiptoeing on 30,000 miles already. So they said,
can I comment on that for a second?
You want to say something about my Jetta? Yeah, I knew this was coming. I should have kept my mouth shut.
You drive a Ford F-250, and you have a 17 acres of horses, and your wife has rescue horses from 47 states. And you're driving a Jetta. I'm just struggling with that. You use the word tiptoe. I'm sorry.
my effort is to create my own cafe, corporate average fuel economy.
Oh.
So I need to be able to make 35 plus to offset her 17 to 19 on the diesel monstrosity.
She doesn't offset your excessive use of cigars and tractor equipment anyway. I mean, let's talk about the tractor equipment. Hang on, Sarah, just a minute. Let's talk about dozer.
Yeah.
How many mowers? Tractor mowers.
Tractor mowers, I've got two.
Two. And you've got a Bobcat?
I've got a skid steer.
A skid steer.
Yeah.
Is there any other heavy equipment?
2 minutes.
Not currently.
That's not true.
What am I missing?
My tractor, you bought me.
No. He said two mowing tractors. So I've got a 65-horse John Deere, okay, and 101 horse.
Nevertheless, you're talking about trying to offset her fuel economy on her Ford F-250, yet you've got all this stuff out there and you're worried about cafe. Here's the good thing about radio. I get the last word. I'm shutting off your microphone and I'm telling everybody else. My name's Mark Salem. If you need to get a hold of me, my email address is easy. It's mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. My website is marksalem.com. You can find the best car repair shops list there, and you can find paint and body, diesel shops, general mechanical repair kind of guys, and stuff like that. Diesels, I think I said diesels, paint and body. So one way or another, I've done my best to make sure your life is as easy as possible, and I don't expect anything for it. I'm perfectly happy to give you car advice, and I give you car advice. I don't care if the attorney general sitting in the studio with me, my wife, your wife, I don't care. I'm telling you the truth. I think most of you can tell the difference when I'm teasing you. And if you can't, I don't care. So the bottom line is if you want to email me, here's what I want you to do. Tell me your make and model and mileage and give me the symptoms. I don't care what Uncle Festus in Missouri says it is. I don't care what YouTube says it is. I don't care what all the idiots all the car people who think they know everything on the internet say. Let's talk symptoms. The vibration. When does it do it? How long does it do it? Is it speed related? Is it temperature related? Does it get worse right, left turn? That kind of stuff. mark@marksalem.com. Thank you for spending your Saturdays with me every Saturday here at 10 to noon.